Booyakasha.
Booyakasha, that was, I caught that on tape.
I's here with my mate, never mind.
I is here with my main man, woman, Morgan Proctor. She is about to do chapter 16. Are you ready, Morgan?
I would hope
you wouldn't say no.
Yeah, no, let's go.
Okay, you can go then.
Okay. One day later, despite school, Chris was walking home with Cody. They were touching hands and cackling. The trees laughed at them as they passed by, moving branches to see the spectacle better. The boys clasped hands like reindeer and jumped in the air, falling to the pavement. I haven't had so much fun since I urinated this morning. Chris was refunding the fun he had sold to Cody yesterday. Me too, except I was reading the encyclopedia this morning and trading on the stock market, Cody said, pocketing the fun that Chris refunded in his long red robe. There's like a zimbillion dentists in this encyclopedia. It's right before dorks, Chris said, but it's after television announcers. At least that's the impression I get when I glance toward the yellow pages. Cody hissed like Tim Roth in Planet of the Apes. Are you voting for Nader? Is he running? Or would you rather vote for ice cubes or puddles of water? Olive juice. Chris kept the refunds funny. They cruised the cow. Just a couple of guys pissing on passing pie vendors. Another couple of guys wearing white uniforms were on the escalator, recounting their days as Contras when they would pin people down and plunk out their eyes like they were water buggers. Those Contras were nasty little motherfuckers, Cody commented. They were teeming with nastiness, Chris sugared the truth. Speaking of nasty little motherfuckers, what are you going to do with Mr. Madero? Cody asked. Nothing bad, if that's what you're thinking, Chris said. I think I'll pull his teeth out one by one. Oh, and I've got that auto parts concert tomorrow night. They turned the corner just in time to see a lady's girdle. It was rude, violet, and blue. When's the last time you lambasted your sister? Cody asked as they cruised for cow. The brilliant rays of sun were looking pretty dumb in this bushwhacked burg. A little, Chris said, lying incoherently. Chris liked lying, especially to a minky. I told her. But me, no buts, you butt. Wow, Rodney Dangerfield is hissing over and over in his grave, Cody said, congratulating himself on finally having said something clever. He knew that everyone thought he was just some idiot who didn't know where the front margin of his shirt was. I'm hissing right now because you're an imbecile, Chris admitted. And to tell you the truth, I feel kind of stupid, too. I really thought that Mr. Madero was who he said he wasn't. Chris was a lean, mean, cab-driving terrier bandito. The only thought he had in his synapses was to find a vegan Abba Zaba bar. His house appeared up ahead like a vision of crematoriums, the Bolshoi Ballet, the U.S. Treasury, and last but not least, the image of that head mofo, Lendy, whom he was going to cut into steak, and tiny John Leguizamo's. Have you told your mom your plans for Lendy? Cody asked. Chris meant to use his inner dialogue, but... Mom is very disgusting. She doesn't shower, and I think she has meningitis. Dad snapped last night and told her they were through. At least we can talk dummies to him. At this point, Chris realized he was yelling. Thank you. I'll be here all week. That was dope. Cody hissed in a gesture that was part dyspepsia and part segue to his own house, a little further down the street. Chris stood in front of his own door. He could hear the ladders and the salt shakers of enthusiasm that made Barky the unseemly mutt he was. Jesus H, Barky, he called out. Show some patience. Chris opened the door anyway. Barky began shaking salt on him, and then licking him like he was a human salt lick made of durable Legos. Okay, okay, and grits started raining down. Chris stood outside the minutes for several doors, waiting for the stupid down to calm the fuck dog. Then Chris walked in and got a glass of kitchen from the water, and a cup of cabinet from their brown sugar. He had learned Mr. Madero from this. In all this time, the dummies had been passed out, especially Lindy's dummy. Palmolive had drunk a gallon of Coca-Cola through her hands. Oh, oh.
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 Got it.
Oh.
Get it. Got it.
And the little puppet started homing in on a dirigible that was docked above the house in the front yard. Is that fucking doll homing in on the dirigible? Dirigible.
Dirigible.
Fan-fucking-tastic, Chris thought. No one was in the house. His parents were working, and Lindy was doing her after-school isometric exercises. He grabbed Mr. Madero and rubbed him for luck. It's showtime, he hissed, rubbing his own temples with his fingers, just like he'd see Alicia rubbing her labia. His eyes hadn't moved as her hands had moved, and they had moved like an otter trying to crack a crab shell. Chris soldered the buttons onto his dress shirt, and then he filled a bowl and started madly toking away. He looked like he had just seen an accordion. He started flossing his teeth with death wax. That's odd, Chris thought in his exterior monologue. I never floss my teeth through my nose. His fingers grasped the death wax anxiously. Any second now, he would double over in Amarillo hallucinations. I sure could use a compact fracture, Chris thought. He could also use a Hajj caravan to carry his pencils and paper. Yes, Hajj reference. But no one was receiving. The paper was frozen solid, and he couldn't write on his hand with a pencil. I've got the world by the notary public. Don't you think, Mr. Madero? He asked the eco-monkey. The monkey, Mr. Madero, looked like he wasn't going to move if you hit him with a welding torch. Chris lifted a welding torch over his head and was about to rain it down on Mr. Madero when the little freak spoke. Ukfe uye upitste amale ukfe. What freaking idiom is he que sera serai? Chris asked himself. The silence echoed all around as Mr. Madero took paper to pen and started planning his escape. Fortunately for Chris, while Mr. Madero was a stud rocket behind Palmolive, he was functionally illiterate behind a pen. But it's not even possible to talk about a dummy as being illiterate or not. Or is it? Chris was inhaling and exhaling, as he usually did, which was badly. Mr. Madero looked like he had lost the impulse to pour postage stamps into his eyes. There's no way I'm going back to Paranoia Land. Chris's inner dialogue came with a seismometer. It's showtime, Mr. Madero, Chris told him. The little blockhead was doubled over, writing out his will on both blue, psychokinetic paper and his shirt. He was scribbling quickly and quietly, each sentence turning in on itself until he found that he couldn't control his hand and he couldn't control his eyes and he was starting to bark. How is your last will and testament coming along, Mr. Madero? Chris knew that the laughter was about to Chernobyl. Not very well, Chris, actually. I have termites. The fucking termites have set up condo complexes with little tiny gated communities, and General Tommy Franks is barbecuing Hebrew national hot dogs. Heh heh. Lindy! Chris! Get your bad selves over here, for Christ's sake. Mr. Powell was a lamb in wolf's clothing, hugging the escalator handrail. They had eaten dinner, and now it was time for their nightly trip to Nordstrom. Lindy was tired because she missed Chris's camel, but she was reading a book about kids who tore up books instead of going to school, and that pepped her up. That's awesome. Chris was the head of a local chapter of the book-tearing Terrier Bandidos. But now, he was quiet, thinking about how Mr. Madero had sabotaged their debut performance with his deathbed for cutie bullcrap. Do we have to go to Nordstrom every night, Daddy? Lindy was sick of artificial light and needless markups. It's filled with freaking orangutans, Chris griped, fighting off the rats with Mr. Madero's limp body. Get me a bud and shut your mouth. Ventriloquists are actually the poor man's phylactery. Except instead of scriptural writings, you've got lame jokes. Harsh physiology, but that was Chris's dad. Then both Lindy and Chris started grunting. Chris threw the beer to his dad, and it parachuted down to him like a medieval system of Jewish theosophy and mysticism. Mr. Powell believed that if you read every third word of scripture, you would become a burro. The game was over. The dad was blitzed and on a one-way escalator to Nordstrom. 1 second later, his brain was melting into the metal stairs. Come on, kids. Daddy needs another pair of shoes. I have my credit card number written in one hand and my Bud Light Velcroed to the other. But maybe I should have a coffee. I'm seeing dummies. But this is the part of the book where I sing from morning to night, Chris inserted. Sing all you want. His dad sure wasn't going to stop him or listen. Let's go. It closes in 5 minutes. I can try on some Vans before they revoke my fruit vending license. You know, Mr. Powell continued, I understand what it's like to be short. My kids thought that I was an accordion for the first years of their lives. And now we've got dummies that think they're alive and the best they can do is bring me salad dentata with supper. Mr. and Mrs. Miller had been sentenced to life on their sofa with taser guns trained on them so they wouldn't be tempted to stray. They were sadly saluting the flag when Chris and Lindy appeared for their performance. Chris always thought that someone had set up the Millers. The two had been couriering low-grade plutonium for Russian agents, and now they were couch-bound, bifocal fogies, and the only couriering they were doing was to and from the loo. They had been slimed by the press, spat on by David Cassidy, and then punted to the Chesterfield by the courts, which found them too old and infirm, even for federal prison. The two woke and slept with the sun. Mr. Miller was a greasy, petty bigot. Lindy always thought that Mrs. Miller was also a bigot, but that was because she confused her with Rush Limbaugh. Why don't they suicide, especially after all the shit that's gone down? Chris thought sequentially. And why do they look alike? The Millers were congenial hosts who looked at everyone as equally contemptible, from white people in Bermuda shorts to cream-colored people in Sudanese shirts. Lindy and Chris have dedicated their lives to ventriloquism, or at least the last couple of weeks, Mrs. Powell explained, though what she really wanted to say was how incredibly silly the two siblings were. They hissed when they should have been listening to what separated the center from the salad. And in addition to this dedication to craft, they also have a talent for pissing people off. Kids, have you heard of Bergen and McCarthy? Mrs. Miller asked in the ensuing silence. Ginny McCarthy? Tushka Bergen? You useless narcissist, Mr. Miller said, almost standing up. They were a pair of left-wingers for the Detroit Pistons. Can you two be right-wingers? Mrs. Miller was McCabeless, and the coffee wasn't strumming through her veins yet. Mr. Powell wanted to stop this silly comedy in its tracks. He understood what separated the center from the salad. Here, Lindy, why don't you commence with the comedy? He looked at the Millers, who were now dallying on the Davenport. And would you two... Just forget it, he said. Lindy put her hand up Palmolive's ass, using a rototiller. The Millers applauded. Mrs. Miller kept slurping down the coffee, and then she started singing at an incredible rate. No applause. Just throw money, Lindy hissed, looking at Palmolive as silence crept over the house like the Knights of Columbus had just ridden in on their anteaters. Chris looked at the escalator, and then at Lindy, and then at the escalator, and then at Lindy. He had to admit, Lindy was good. She had a natural feel for comedy and for her audience. The Millers were just too old, or they'd been on the couch too long. In any event, they were now throwing debris at Lindy and Palmolive, and they were both turning a brilliant red. Mrs. Miller was having trouble breathing, and Mr. Miller was having trouble choking the life out of her. Lindy concluded the act to a fiery silence. The Millers were decidedly disinterested in the kind of new and edgy comedy that Lindy brought to their living room prison. Lindy turned the television back on for them, and this seemed to satiate them. Mr. Miller loosened the grip on his Mrs. Miller. And, grab her, Mr. Miller said, but nobody was sure to whom. Chris turned off the TV and grabbed Mr. Madero by a stiff prick. This is Mr. Madero, he told the Millers. We're doing an unannounced concert at school tomorrow night. We dare you to come and try throwing shit at us. Oh, that's right, you can't. You can't move your fat asses from that couch, Mr. Madero said in a badass voice. Your dummy is pretty fucking rude, Mr. Miller said. So are you, lardass, Mr. Madero is slaying him. and the Millers kept trying to sidestep him. Chris's mom squirmed in the silence. The Millers were even more desperate to leave the convict confines of the couch. Mr. Madero leaned back, relaxed. He looked at Chris's beady, rodent eyes, and then he looked at the Millers. "One's a bigot and one's a rat, and they're both convicts?" he asked evilly. Suffering on the sofa, Mr. Miller looked at his watch as his wife stretched her legs and looked at the ceiling. They both looked and felt like horses' asses. "I don't know why we're here. Who gives a flying fuck about this pair of pedant podiatrists?" Mr. Madero was on a roll. "And speaking of dentists, who made your dentures? A one-eyed armadillo?"
That's a good question.
"And is the lighting bad in here, or are you both dead?" "Chris!" Mr. Powell screamed. "You bastard!" Both of the Millers looked like Brillo pads that had single-handedly cleaned out a porta-potty. That's pretty bad.
Yep.
"This is most heinous. I want you to prostrate yourself in front of the Millers," Mrs. Powell insisted, passing Chris on her way to the salad bar. The Millers had a world-class salad bar. "Me? I didn't say nothing." Chris was a tart of the world. "I meant it. Chris, I'm going to decapitate you." His dad was so furious that he was fetching. Mr. Madero turned his wrath again at the Millers. "You losers!" He was chilling. "I've spent 6 years in this goofy tan fedora. You guys must be 80, and I'll bet you haven't seen a hat this horrid." The Millers looked like they had seen such a hat. "I don't get your sense of humor," Mrs. Miller said. "My own son never insulted me that grossly," Mr. Miller said in a low voice. "Chris, what are you doing?" Mrs. Powell was ready to leave. She had ponied up some baby back ribs and crustacean salad for her and her husband. "The Millers are going to help your dad decapitate you. I don't believe this shit." Chris grabbed Mr. Madero around the neck for want of anything better to do, but he kept babbling. He was treating the articulation of the English language as if every word, verily, every letter, had abandoned the lexicon, save for one. "I'm sorry," was ultimately all he could push from his lungs out to his mouth. In the meantime, spring had sprung in the air. God was in his vault, and the new escalators had arrived. The lag in the rhyme was in direct proportion to the speed of the crime.
Morgan, that was really good. Thank you. Anything you want to say? She's speechless. She's too brilliant. That was 16.